I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lope today. Nice work if you can get it. Currently charming audiences at Broadway's Imperial Theater is a heady mix of Gershwin music, moonlight magic, and sheer nonsense. It's the story of a philandering mama's boy millionaire who meets his comeuppance through a band of disguised rum runners at his spectacular Long Island mansion. Joining us today are Judy Kaye, who plays prohibitionist Duchess Estonia Dulworth, and Michael McGrath, who plays bootlegger Cookie McGee. Both actors won Tonys this year as Best Featured Actors in a Musical. And it is a genuine pleasure to welcome you both at WNYC.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, nice work. Feels like a classic musical, but it's really brand new. What was the genesis of the show?
We are told the genesis was from all of the relations. They wanted to hear this music on Broadway again.
The Gershwin relations?
Yeah, the whole family wanted there to be another show on Broadway like Crazy for You and He Loves and She Loves. That's the song. That's not the name of the show. But anyway, they found Joseph DiPietro and
10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, Michael's been around for the whole deal.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it was 10 years ago. We did a first sort of small production of this up at the Goodspeed Opera House in Connecticut. It was called They All Laughed at that time, and
that was the title.
Yeah, and that's where it started, and I was involved in that production as well.
And playing the same role.
Yep. Yeah.
So what's that journey been like for you to be 10 years ago?
I sort of forgot about it. I took out the journey
along the way.
No. So I thought it had legs at that time, but, certain things happen. And I think they had money and then didn't have the money. And this project went away and then came up every once in a while in the form of readings in the city with a host of great people over the years. Until this current production, it was floundering like that, but now it's full-fledged.
I'm very curious about that process then, because you're probably one of the couple of people who knows what it was like 10 years ago, and what are the major changes? Is it structural? Is it little lines? What is it?
It's not as huge as you might think. There was the opening number actually took place on a beach with Jimmy and the girls, which now takes place in his living room. Halfway through the first act, that number, I got to be there. But it pretty much stayed intact as far as Judy's character, my character, our journey. It's pretty much the same show.
And Judy, in terms of Gershwin, it kind of reminds me of like a best of album. Why don't you tell us some of the tunes that have incorporated into Nice Work, if you can get it?
Well, the Estates offered Joe pretty much the entire catalog of Gershwin, including the symphonic pieces, and the symphonic pieces are used as connective tissue and underscoring. And
I heard a little Rhapsody in Blue.
Yeah, how about that? And some
fabulous
other stuff. I mean, I'm unfortunately not totally up on the whole catalog, so I can't tell you the names. I know the phrases, but they come from all over.
Concerto in F, probably.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. David Chase did a monumental job of sneaking all kinds of stuff in there for the people who will get it. So there's lots of levels of appreciation here. And first and foremost is everybody has, just a crazy, funny time. And then there's this beautiful music. We start with
Sweet and Low Down.
Sweet and Low Down. Mm-hmm. And then there's a somebody I'm longing to see.
Someone to watch over me.
And the classic Demon Rum.
Demon Rum. There's my first tune. Now, I said, where did this come from? Evidently, a movie score, maybe underscoring in something. I don't know, but it's perfect. Perfect for the moment and perfect for my character. And I've got my backup boys. They're just amazing, though. The guys are just incredible in that thing. And then
Kelly and Matthew sing at the end of the show a song that was cut from Lady Be Good.
Oh, wonderful song. My actually turned out to be my favorite song in the show.
Yeah,
Will
beautiful.
You Remember Me? Will You Remember Me? I had people at an ASCAP event say, we never heard that song. We don't know what that is.
It's one of the joys of this musical in, is that there are surprises with old songs and some of your old favorites.
A lot of them are there. We didn't really touch Porgy, obviously, because it's playing right next door to us, although I have a portamento in Demon Rum that is an homage to that. And then, what else is
in Bill Elliott also, his orchestrations are not to be believed.
How many people in this orchestra?
What do we got? 20?
I think there's 18.
18? They sound like a
which
symphony.
Includes a tuba, which you never find in a
two pianos.
Yeah,
a full percussion set. I mean, you never see a percussion set in a pit, in a Broadway pit.
Acoustic guitar.
Like this. Everything's acoustic. Everything is acoustic, except for the organ, which is in the wedding, which is produced by synth.
Yeah.
Ever since South Pacific, when it had that bigger orchestra, this little bit of a trend to have more musicians down in the pit is so gratifying for the audience.
Oh, absolutely. It is for us, too.
And there was a time when they were trying to push them all out.
And they wanted us to. Actually, I did a rehearsal when I was doing Mamma Mia. They did a rehearsal with the machine. Audiences would not want to hear that. It was horrible.
Right. You want that full experience. Oh. Mm-hmm. You made a Judy E.K., you made a little joke during your Tony acceptance speech about the chandeliers. Mm-hmm. For those who didn't get it, tell us what that was about.
Well, I don't want to give away the moment, but I, of course, was in Phantom of the Opera, and there's a chandelier that figures heavily in that. And then we have a chandelier in the show, and I don't want to go into it too much because part of the joy of that chandelier is that it comes upon everyone unawares. And I'd kind of like to keep it that way.
I don't blame you.
But just suffice it to say, I have a very good time with the chandelier.
Well, was there, was that history of yours with the chandelier part of that, or it just was just putting it in?
Joe DiPietro wrote in the script, I almost did it. Well, oh, no, there
so
it is.
I'm so good on it.
Anyway.
The chandelier is out of the bag now, I think.
It was in the script. Let me just put it that way. And when I read the script, I didn't pay any attention to it. Absolutely not. And then the first day of rehearsal, Kathleen Marshall, our wonderful director, said, and about that. And suddenly I went,
Been there.
Yeah, but it's really fun.
Let's talk about the other cast, Matthew Broderick, Kelly O'Hara. Mm. Tell us about working with them.
Mm. Who doesn't love them? I mean, they're just, he's funny, always funny.
He's a great colleague, too.
Yeah.
He's very generous.
Good team player.
To old people
and,
like me.
And Kelly is adorable and sings like a lark. And she's a great little actress. And I mean, they are both a blast
to work
with.
And then the very deep bench of other people. I think our ensemble, each one of them could pretty much carry a show on their own. They're all really, really good. Mm-hmm.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lope, talking to Judy Kaye and Michael McGrath from the current Broadway production of Nice Work, If You Can Get It. I loved both of them in it, both Matthew Broderick and Kelly O'Hara, but I have to say, in a funny way, I didn't believe for a second that she was a tough gal, but in that sort of old movie way where you kind of like, no, they're not a tough gal because they're kind of like a star, it totally works.
I think that's totally appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah. And you're right. She sings like a lark, and he's very funny. I think it's an amazing, amazing cast. These roles really fit the two of you like hand in glove. Were there adaptations for each of you, or the script came and it just happened to be great casting and it fit?
For me, it was great casting and it fit. I mean, I Cookie McGee, Judy will tell you, kind of lives inside of me anyway. there's a lot of Cookie in Michael McGrath. And I love these characters from the old movies anyway. I'm attracted to those mugs from the 1930s and wisecracking funny guys from the movie. So I didn't have a very difficult time coming up with Cookie McGee, I have to admit.
And for you, Judy, as well? Did they adapt things for you, or it was right there on the page?
I have a saying about my career. Someday on a stone somewhere, it'll say high notes and pratfalls. somehow this is an ongoing theme in my life. Though I every now and then some really, in my opinion, intelligent person will allow me to play something other than these kind of ladies, these wonderful, they're wonderful characters, of Margaret Dumont sort of.
We see that.
Yeah, those ladies who are a little over the top, one way or the other. I love doing this. It's fun. And over time, I've I feel like everything is a continuum in my career, starting with Lucy Van Pelt. And there's a little of Lucy in pretty much everything that happens to me. I don't know. So there's certainly some of her in this. I've been saying that I think Estonia is sort of the love child of Florence Foster Jenkins and Emma Goldman. So there you go.
You see it right there. When you did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, I think at the time you said you were afraid of being typecast. Do you still feel that way?
You know, no. But every now and then people let me do other things. I've gotten to play, you know, do plays that are, characters are very different. Last summer I played transsexual in Tales of the City. I'm hoping to get to do that for New York audiences one of these days. So there are other things out there. But I do love Estonia. She's a passionate soul. And I love playing characters that change, and she changes. So,
and working together, there's a real team between the two of you. I imagine there's that first day where it's hi, how are you, and you get to, is there a little dance that you do over time to create the onstage chemistry?
I don't think so. I think we both understood the nature of the comedy right off the bat. I mean, we're a couple of old pros at it, I think, it's set up and it's punchline, and it's set up and it's punchline. And
I always wanted to do vaudeville.
I
had two relatives back in the day who were members of a group called the Avon Comedy Four. And I sort of feel like I'm ham and egging it,
It's a blast to do something
it
like
is,
that because you don't get a chance to do it, and to actually hear the response of the audience, because they don't hear that kind of stuff that much anymore. That sort of setup punch.
Right. And I like being the setup person. I mean, that's what I get
and
to do.
And listen, it's a harder
so
job.
Fun.
It actually is
to
a harder job
to set something
job.
Up.
Yeah,
and then you just hit it out of
to
the park
to play straight.
Yeah.
I mean, ask Bud Abbott, you know.
And in these extreme behaviors and these sort of exaggeration comedy moments, there is a sense of reality. How do you create that?
You believe in completely in what you're doing. I mean, you have to create a character and you go through the same process that you would if you were doing O'Neill. You know, you have to know who the person is, why they're there, what they want, all of that good stuff, and then. The comedy sort of starts to take care of itself in a way, if you got timing.
Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's more difficult in a comedy that you actually have to believe it even more. You have to make it even more honest for the comedy to work, you know, rather as opposed to O'Neill.
Heightened honesty.
Yeah.
I like it.
There was a little video online describing your backstage traditions, what you do backstage. Maybe we could talk through this just a little bit, Michael.
Sure.
First of all,
I think I remember this.
Advil and a cold compress.
Right.
Is that preventative? Or
it's very preventative. On my knees.
So this is this job is tough on your body.
Well, my career has been tough on my body, so it's I'm just trying to
tell you what.
In
if
there.
You ask anybody, everybody who does this, eventually. They're the walking wounded, you know.
Right. Takes a toll.
A lot of pratfalls over the years.
Have you ever been out of commission for the night on this run yet?
I was out once, but it didn't have anything to do with my knees. It was a little personal business. But I'm taking a vacation soon, and I'm looking forward to that.
It's always amazing that it worked it out with all the subs and everybody, so the show must go on.
They work so hard.
Yeah.
So you do a few pratfalls, not to give too much away. Do you stop by his dressing room for the Advil, or do you have your own?
I have my own bottles, packs, ice packs.
We have our own bottles, too, as a matter
of
fact.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and bottles of other things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that before the show or after?
No, well, after.
That's after.
I just wouldn't dare before. I could get killed if I did it.
Can you imagine there was a time period, though? You both know probably stories about guys, women, little before. I can't even imagine.
I visited a ballet company in Frankfurt once. I went because I had a friend who was dancing. And at the interval, we went to the canteen downstairs below the stage level. And all the dancers were down there throwing them back.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it. And then they were going to go back out and get up on point on a rake stage.
I wouldn't be able to remember the lyrics to Happy Birthday if I had a couple of drinks before a show.
No.
Better after.
Yeah.
So your list, I want to continue. Hair gel is evidently very important. You talked about playing this mug. This hair that you have.
Right.
It's a lot of it's the hair gel, right?
Yes, it is. It allows me to, whenever I get angry and mad, it allows the hair to fall forward in a sort of a crazy Jimmy Cagney look, which I kind of like.
And do you do your own hair, or there must be people back there doing it?
No, they cut it. I have it cut in a sort of a 1930s mug. But I do my own hair at night.
And he chose the style himself.
Yes.
It's great, and it works out. So in addition, Judy, to the Advil, any other good luck charms? How do you dress up your dressing room?
Oh, my dressing room is full of mementos and things, and for some reason, over the years, pictures of the Flatiron Building. I don't quite know why. I do know why. I have a relationship to the Flatiron Building. My grandparents were artists and had a studio at the top of it back in the 20s, in the teens, actually. So, they had little talismans from other shows and just some music that I listened to before the show and things to stretch out on and magazines. I have a bit of time in the first act to hang out.
Don't come on for a while.
I'm on. I do my number, and then I go off, and I return for the end of the first act, and then second act I'm working. But I have little projects going on in the room.
Knowing your history, there's always these great show business stories about somebody getting sick and having to go on and replace somebody. You had one of those. Tell us about it.
I did. I was the understudy to Madeline Kahn in a show called On the 20th Century. And I guess it was the day after they did the commercial or the album. I don't know. Anyway, one of those. And I was minding my own business. I actually wound up being 5 minutes late for a half hour because I had my watch wasn't working right, and I'd come from having a little dinner where I, by the way, had a glass of white wine with my fish because...
You had no idea you were going on.
No, I had no idea. And then everybody knew but me. They'd been trying to get through to me since 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd been at the gym. We didn't have cell phones then. So I walked in, and they said, "You're going on." And that was back then. And then... a number of weeks, that was like April 15th, actually, believe it or not, and like by March 6th was the first time I went on. April 15th was when I took over. I was given the role.
And it was big for your career, right?
Yes, it just really put it into high gear, yeah.
It's so great to see you both in Nice Work If You Can Get It. Michael McGrath, Judy Kay, it's a great, fun musical. I certainly recommend it, and especially people who love Gershwin and those just incredibly beautiful melodies and songs. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Nice Work If You Can Get It is at the Imperial Theater on West 45th Street. The cast album, which we've been listening to, will be released next month. Judy, Michael, thanks so much for being here.
Let the Danube flow along, and the Fledermaus keep the wine and give me some by Strauss. By Joe, by Jing, by Strauss is the thing. So I say to Hachacha, Eros, just give me an umpapa by Strauss.
Yeah, well, I got a better idea.